Mark Horowitz, just a good friend. And Mark's been on this show 4 times. I went back and checked before. Mark has history of banjo, bluegrass, folk music, of all kinds of different performances and teaching. You can go check those out on the website, the unrealbluegrass.com website. They're there. Mark's going to be here live. He's going to talk about a new banjo that he has devised. It's awesome. It's a kind of a neat composite fiber neck and a pot from a different... you're going to want to hear about it, but not just because it's fun to look at and talk at, but the sound that Mark will describe is something that I think you're going to hear more and more of, and the durability and just the whole way that he came up with it. Always looking forward to talking to Mark. I think, if I've done everything correctly on the phone, should be my good friend Mark Horowitz. Are you there, Mark?
Howdy doody.
How you doing, man?
Good.
I let everybody know that in case you had to run away quickly,
on baby watch.
You're expecting to be a grandpa any second now.
Well, you know, who knows? My wife and I were at a birthday party for a friend last night, and just as we're getting out of the car, my daughter texted my wife saying that she had started getting a little bit of a cramping situation, and, you know, we spent the next hour and a half texting back and forth, and nothing materialized, so we went to bed after we got home, and still nothing, so... There you go.
All right, then. Well, it'll all turn out fine. Listen, you know, I went back this morning and checked, Mark. Folks, Mark Horowitz has been a guest on the show counting today 5 times. Can you believe that?
Oh, it's like the Saturday Night Live 5-timers club.
It is. Well, what you get for being a guest 5 times, you know what you get for being a guest 5 times?
A key to a special room.
No, you don't. I am authorized to punch one hole out of your Starbucks card along that journey.
Excellent. Just make sure it's a decaf half latte with extra foam.
Listen, dude, all I do is poke the holes. You got to make the order. But I'm willing to do it. Mark, I'm so happy that you could come by. You've been talking about this. And just to recap real quickly, Mark has been involved in bluegrass and folk music for so long, all through the burgeoning of it in the New York area. And we've talked about that a lot and all the people that Mark knows. And it's historical. I mean, it's a great record. You can go listen to those things on Unreal Bluegrass.
I'm kind of like the Zelig.
That's right.
Bluegrass and folk.
That's right. Every time you take a picture of in a field somewhere, there's Mark Horowitz playing part of Zelig. I get it.
Oh, I am outstanding in my field.
Oh, sure. Yeah. All right. Well, we've been talking for a couple of months. You've had this thing in the works, and I want you to talk about this new banjo. It's by the way, I've entitled this segment. It's the first segment of Breaking Banjo News. I thought people might tune in more if I thought we were actually going to destroy banjos, but it's actually more like breaking news about banjos. But I like breaking banjo news, so we're going to talk about your brand new banjo today and how it came to be.
Well, basically, I reacted to a situation where at the Clifftop Old Time String Band Festival three summers ago, I had a brand new banjo that I took there with me. It was a Neckville Atlas, which is a 12-inch open back banjo. And I liked the way it sounded, and it was very lightweight. And the neck, I don't know whether, you know, it was because the wood had not settled in yet or whatever reason, it was a very wet week. It rains a lot at Clifftop most times. And I kept having to adjust the truss rod in the neck to, you know, cure buzzes about 2 or 3 times a day, it seemed like. So when I got home, I looked through the Gold Tone catalog. I represent Gold Tone as their sales representative in the Northeast. And because I vaguely remembered it, that on their parts list, they had graphite composite necks as an accessory item that you could order and, you know, put on your own banjo. So I called Wayne Rogers, the president of the company, and asked him if he had an old-time neck in stock, and he did, complete with a scoop on the fingerboard end. And, you know, and I said, and I asked him if it came, you know, if the heel was profiled for any particular pot, but he said, no, it's blank. You can cut it to whatever pot you need it to fit. So I had him ship that out to the Neckville plant, and I took my Atlas banjo apart, shipped the pot out to them, and I asked them to please install the Gold Tone graphite neck onto the Atlas pot with their patented neck attachment scheme, which is a special aluminum fitting that...
Don't talk about it. I don't want to get sued for violating something Tom's working on.
Oh, no. This is all public knowledge.
All right. Okay, you say.
So basically, what I was looking for was a banjo that would stand up in the environments that I frequently played old-time banjo in, which is to say outdoors at festivals and in all kinds of weather under, you know, huddled under tents in the rain and so on. So over the next year or so, I experimented with different components, bridges, heads, tail pieces, even armrests and nut materials and so on, and finally arrived at the combination of ingredients that gave me the sounds and playability that I was looking for. And once I arrived at that final configuration and began taking the banjo around and, you know, playing it at various gatherings, people would remark on how great it sounded. And, like, I would get comments like, hey, I was three campsites away and I had to come over and hear what was making that sound. So this told me that I had something, you know, special and that, you know, people seemed to really gravitate towards it. And what came to a head at a party that I went to last October, it was for Pete Peterson of the Orpheus Supertones' 70th birthday down in Pennsylvania. And at that party, I ended up in a three banjo jam with two very interesting people, one of whom was Dr. Ian Alexander from Australia, who is a fellow that brings an old-time band over to Australia every summer and tours them around and flies them around in his private plane. He's very wealthy. And basically shows them a good time, pays them well, gives them gifts, and sends them home with very good feelings. And the other person in this three banjo jam was Hillary Burhans, who is a chef. Well, she and her husband own a restaurant in Athens, Ohio. And she's a member of a band with my friend Jane Rothfield that was brought over to Australia by Dr. Alexander last summer. So when he came to the States with his wife to visit, he was at this party, and the three of us ended up playing three banjos, just kind of trading tunes. Anyway, during that interlude, the doctor asked me if he could play my banjo. So he played it for about 5 minutes, and then he stopped. He looked up at me and he said, "I want one of these, mate. Money's no object. Can you do it?" So I said, "Well, I guess so."
You swallowed hard and thought, "I wonder if he really knows what he said." Just
well, you know, I basically said, "You know, I did this once. I guess I can have another one."
Sure.
So, and then about 20 minutes later, when we finished playing, I was out in the hall and talking to him. And his wife came over to us, and she says to me, "I told Ian that he couldn't have his new banjo unless we gave one to Hillary, so make it two." So I said, okay. Anyway, I got home from the weekend, and I called Wayne at Goldtone, and I told him this story.
Yeah, about Wayne Rogers.
Yeah, and he said, "Well, why don't we just do a Mark Horowitz signature model?" And it had not occurred to me at all. I was not planning on going into the banjo business, and since I already represented Goldtone as a sales rep and Neckville too, for that matter, so I said, "I don't know." And then later on that day, I called Tom Neckville and I told him the story, and he said, "Why don't we do a Mark Horowitz signature model?" So I told him that Wayne had already come up with that notion, and the only way that I could possibly consider doing such a thing is if they cooperated on it, because I did need the neck from Goldtone. It's a proprietary item. Only they have it. And the Atlas pot was, you know, part and parcel of the sound of the banjo as well. So I got them on a conference call a couple of days later, and we ironed out the details and full speed ahead. So we've already delivered the banjo, the initial banjo, to Dr. Alexander in Australia. And he wrote an email as soon as he got it out of the box and told me how delighted he was. And Hillary's banjo should be ready in about 2 or 3 weeks. She's recovering from a knee replacement operation 3 days ago, so she'll have plenty of time to sit and play with it. And then we have 10 more in the pipeline, and Wayne had asked me to bring my original one to the NAMM show, the music trade show in California last January, to kind of keep it in the booth and show it to people. So I did that, and some luminaries stopped by, most notably George Groom, from Groom Guitars in Nashville, and George played it and just had all kinds of great things to say about it. And he said, "You know, I'll order one." And he said, if it flies, we'll stock it. So that was good. And then Stan Werben from Elderly Instruments in Michigan, big online seller.
Oh yeah.
And also a Clawhammer banjo player, and his assistant Cynthia, who's also a Clawhammer banjo player, stopped by the booth, and they both loved it, and they ordered one as well. So right now I have orders from the first 10. I probably have 7 of them spoken for. And there's been no advertising on this. I put up a Facebook page to kind of let my Facebook friends know about it, but there's no website or anything like that. And the word of mouth's been kind of fun. So the main assets of this thing, like I said, are the composite neck, the graphite composite neck, is completely inert in terms of changes due to temperature or humidity. So once you adjust it to your liking, and it does have an adjustable truss rod in order to aid your setting it up with the right amount of relief for your left-hand feel, but it by no means needs to be adjusted to compensate for anything. It's just for setup purposes. But this neck is impervious to weather conditions, so taking it to festivals and such where rain is a factor, you won't be troubled with, you know, buzzes materializing over the week's festivities. And then the other part of it is, sonically, it's really interesting because what I came to realize was that the pot, which is all wood, it doesn't have bracket shoes or a bracket band to hold the brackets on. It has basically a wooden flange that's part of the lathing process of shaping the rim. So it's a wood tone ring as well. So it's very lightweight. And it's made from this recovered sunken birch from the Great Lakes. That was wood that had been lost in shipments due to storms hundreds of years ago, or 100 years ago.
Let's just say a thousand.
Yeah, let's just say a thousand. Okay. I like that. Hyperbole.
Sounds more momentous, but well, anyway.
More romantic.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the combination of that very mellow sounding and bell-like tone you get from that rim, combined with the composite neck, which is unlike wood, very homogeneous in nature. It's a, you know, density is controlled, and it's the same material all the way through. So the combination of those two materials ended up with a very focused, round and beautiful tone, but still could be heard, you know, well away from the place where you're playing it. And it's a very responsive instrument. When Hilary Berhans played the instrument at the party, after Doc handed it to her, she practically started crying and said that, you know, she said, "I'm not a gearhead. I've been playing the same old banjo for 15 years, but I really wish I could afford one of these." And as soon as Dr. Alexander heard that, that's when he got the idea to buy her one. So that's really how it all came about. And I'm tickled that people seem to like it so much. It's not the kind of thing that's going to sell in the hundreds or even the dozens. I think, you know, if we sell over a 3 or 4 or 5 year span, if we sell 40 or 50 of these things, it would be a huge success. And, you know, Gold Tongue would be very happy about that too. So, because they're handling the marketing and distribution.
What's the designation? What do we call this thing? I'm going to ask
the model number. Yeah, Gold Tongue uses OT for their old time banjos a lot. So this is the OT-NH for me, signature model banjo.
Right.
And each one will have a numbered brass plaque with that information on it on the dowel stick inside the pot, which is very nice. And it's not inexpensive, although it's comparable in terms of pricing, in terms of pricing to banjos from other, you know, high quality small makers. It retails for $29.95. So, you know, the stores probably discounted a little bit. And I would imagine it can be had for something like $2,500 with a hard shell case.
Well, Mark, knowing you and having talked to you, so although we've never met, isn't that weird? But knowing you well enough to know, you said a word that was actually in my mind to ask you, because I understood the attractiveness of the material that the neck is made out of, as far as, you know, once you get it set and you're trudging across the fields in different temperatures, you don't have to readjust it. So that's great. I understand that. But you said sonically. I know Mark Horowitz is not going to play a banjo for convenience sake. You have to have a right sound. So what did you actually think that this neck with this pot would give you all of those features, or how did that come about?
Well, I go back with composites a long time. When I was working at Mandolin Brothers back in from 79 to 85, early in the 80s, I think in 1982, I got a phone call from a guy who said that he had built a musical instrument that he wasn't a player, but he was an industrial designer, and he was fascinated with musical instruments, and he built this thing that he doesn't know what to do with, and he heard that I was a pedal steel player, and it kind of resemble the pedal steel, and when I take a look at it and devise a tuning and a playing method for it, well, it turned out to be some kind of table guitar, a guitar on legs, at about 14 strings and frets, and it was really kind of a Frankenstein thing.
Frets?
But
14 strings and frets?
Yeah, 14 strings and frets. You didn't play it with a steel, you played it with your fingers, but down on you know, on the horizontal.
Okay.
Kind of like Thumbs Carlyle, I guess. At any rate, I recognized this guy's name from a little article I had read in Guitar Player magazine a few weeks before, so I asked him if he could bring his prototype bass to show the Mandolin Brothers, Hap Kuffner and Stan Jay, if he came out to visit me with this instrument. So he came out, and it turned out to be Ned Steinberger, who, as a lot of people know, was the father of use of composites in musical instruments and of the headless graphite bass. And this was a big hit back in the 80s, and he came out then later on with guitars and other things. He sold that company to Gibson later on and started another company, which I also now represent, NS Design, and they make violin family electric instruments, very fine stuff.
Okay.
At any rate, so I knew about this material and the benefits of it in terms of constructing something out of a material that had a known structure on a molecular level that would transmit vibrations in a very uniform way. And wood being a natural material, the density and moisture content vary throughout the piece of any given piece of wood. So how it behaves on a given day in a different set of conditions is going to vary. So, I did suspect that marrying the wood pot with this composite neck would come up with some kind of unique sound, but I wasn't quite sure how, which is why all the experimentation after the thing was put together with different other components. Because as any banjo player knows, or anybody that fools around with banjo knows, the banjo is the hot rod of the instrument world. You can bolt stuff on and off it, and parts are interchangeable, and every part in the whole has a effect on the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really important to me to get what I was hearing in my head out of this banjo. And since I've been fooling with these things for 50 years or so, I have a large collection of parts and bridges, heads, and tail pieces, and all kinds of things. So I began plugging stuff in and out of this thing, and finally, like I said, came up with a sound and playability that really suited me. And like I said, it's just a coincidence that both companies supplying the major components decided at the same time that it would be good to put out a model. So that's how it came about.
The the overall odd concept is that here's an old time sounding banjo that has this new composite neck, and you know how weird it is for people to bring bluegrass musicians or old-time musicians forward as far as technology. So here you have the old sound with this composite neck stuck on it.
Well, obviously, and I've been through this before with Goldtone. They actually put out a model, a bluegrass banjo with their bluegrass graphite neck called the Iron Horse. And this was a combination of a pot that they had built by First Quality Banjo, Sullivan's company,
mm-hmm.
and their graphite neck. This was also a fairly expensive proposition. And in playing that around various places, I did get a lot of push from traditional players who said, I could never put an instrument like that, and so on and so forth.
I love it.
Yeah. But the old-time players that I've run into, in particular Hillary Burhans, who's a very fine climber, banjo player, and a terrific chef, by the way. She just immediately, she didn't even particularly care what the thing was made of. As soon as she started playing it, a tear practically ran down her cheek, and she just loved the way it sounded, and the fact that she didn't have to work so hard with her right hand to get the sound out of the thing. It was very responsive to her touch, and she really was attracted to that aspect of it. So there are, leagues of old-time players who will play mostly any old thing,
mm-hmm.
as long as it's old or as long as it's funky.
Right.
But I'm kind of a scientific nutcase when it comes to, making improvements on instruments for functionality. And, you know, functionality, both ergonomically and, you know, the way the thing plays and the way your hands interact with it, and sonically. And if I come up with a recipe for sound that involves, you know, a space age material, well, so be it. If I can get a hold of the necks, and we do have a supplier for them, then I'll build it. And people, like I said, people have responded, you know, way out of proportion to what I thought was going to happen.
Well, build it and they will play it. Let me ask you this, Mark. What was it about the right hand, the use, Hillary's right hand, it was so she didn't have to work, so I forget the term you used, but why would that, just because the sound is so consistent?
Well, you know, it's a very responsive instrument.
Okay.
In other words, when you play Palmer Banjo, you're knocking down on the strings rather than picking up. It's a stroke style. So you're using either a fingernail on your index or middle finger. Some people devise a pick of some kind to fasten to their nail, but I do personally myself because my nails are kind of thin. But almost any banjo I pick up of someone else's, either they have towel stuff in the back or they're using a skin head, which I absolutely deplore, by the way. And they have these things so that they don't sound like banjos. They sound more like percussion instruments. And I'm not from that school. I like to play an instrument that responds to my touch. So if I want to play softly, I can. If I want to play loudly, it sounds good and it holds up. It doesn't break up under the attack of the right hand. So what Hillary meant was that, you know, she basically didn't have to play it as hard to get the sound she wanted out of it. So there's less hand fatigue involved and, you know, less nail breakage and so on.
And yet the range is greater as far as the range of the sound you can get is greater with less effort. You can be, like you said, you can play it louder or softer. Okay.
So the expressive possibilities in terms of playing clawhammer expressively, which it's not usually known for except in the hands of somebody maybe like Adam Hurt, who's a very expressive player. And he liked it too, by the way. He played it at a couple of occasions, and he really liked it. Another peculiarity of the properties of this neck on this pot is that the material the neck is made of, I'm sure, contributes to the fact to everybody's ears. They perceive it as the tone of the notes is constant from the first fret to the last. And most banjo players will recognize when I say that as you go up the neck towards the pot, the notes kind of take on a hollow quality, which is because they're more partials than the fundamental note that you're playing. This is because of you're shortening the length of the vibrating string so much that the partials take over. But with this banjo, and I find this on my Iron Horse bluegrass banjo as well with the graphite neck, the timbre of the notes, the color of the notes, the substance of them is just as full at the last fret as they are at the first fret.
Wow, that is something.
Yeah, so it really, you know, it was a funny set of circumstances, you know, and I'm not coming on here like I built this thing or I did any great feat of invention here. You know, basically, I just was looking for a solution to a problem in terms of dependability of the instrument in a harsh environment so that I wouldn't have to keep running for my tool pocket, my tool pack, you know. And that's like tool pack Shakur, you know.
Jeepers. 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks from now, someone's going to wake up thinking, oh, I get it.
So that's the story, and I'm going to be teaching at Banjo Camp North in Connecticut next month, and I'll have that banjo with me, and hopefully one that I can sell as well, in case anybody's interested in buying one up there. And I plan to have the instrument with me at festivals this summer as well. So anybody that's interested, Goldtone, you know, as yet has not come up with an advertising scheme for this thing, and I'm thinking that we really shouldn't make a big deal out of it because these necks are very hard to obtain. The company that makes them is a small company that does a lot of other graphite projects.
Okay.
And production capability, I think we won't be able to get more than about a dozen necks every year.
Okay. The pot, Mark, the pot is the pot a deeper pot than many that you would get, or how does that?
No. It's the only unusual thing about the pot that most people would notice is that it's built up out of blocks. And block style rims have become very popular. Stelling switched to them. Stelling used to use them actually back in their earliest days. And because of the difficulty of gluing the things up, you know, with precision, he went to a three-ply pot. But once he realized that Tony Pass went into the rim business about 15 years ago, mm-hmm. and once Stelling realized he could order them from Tony, he went back to that pot. Mm-hmm. So now all Stelling banjos come with block rims. These are rims that are built up. They start life as a hexagonal or octagonal ring made of glued up blocks of wood that renders it very strong. It doesn't have the stresses on it that a bent rim would have. And then they leave it down to the shape that they want. But mm-hmm. the rim on the Atlas that we use for this banjo is patterned after a rim on a banjo from Ashbourne, which was a maker in the late 1800s. And again, it's all wood. The hooks go through, instead of going through a bracket shoe or a shoe on a bracket band, they go through a flange that's actually machined out of the wood itself that circles the outside of the rim.
Okay.
So that reduces a lot of the weight. And another thing that renders this banjo, you know, great for festival use is that it's much lighter than most.
That was my next question. What do you think this baby weighs when you're walking around?
Oh, it may weigh 6 pounds, 7 pounds at mm-hmm. the most, you know. And, you know, we equip it with, you know, very fine components that are also geared towards, you know, dependability and longevity. We use Godo machine tuners from Japan, which are acknowledged to be the finest planetary tuners out there. And they're fixed ring peg as well. And for the nut and the fifth ring tip, I went to GraphTech, which is a company up in Canada that makes the material called Tusk, T-U-S-Q. And the black variety of their tusk material is impregnated with Teflon. So when you use this stuff as a nut, the string glides through it very nicely when you tune so that the string doesn't get hung up in the nut grooves and cause tuning problems. And in old-time music, in Quahammer banjo, we do a lot of retuning. So we'll tune up a whole tone from G to play an A, or up into double D tuning, or down into low D tuning, and so on. So that's one thing that I insisted on because I wanted the thing to be, again, as maintenance-free and trouble-free as possible.
Yeah.
And then I also use a terrific armrest that's made by a fellow named Doug at Little Mountain Accessories down in Missouri.
Sure.
And it's called the Thin Line Armrest. Mm-hmm. And he makes them out of several different exotic woods, but I use the one that he does out of corian, which is a material that DuPont makes. It's used for counters and bathroom enclosures and so on. It's very, very dense, very strong. And the black corian goes very, very nicely with the black composite neck. And it just looks good, and it's comfortable. Bailey uses them on his banjos as well.
The nut?
The armrest.
Oh, the armrest. Okay, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, All right.
Cool. All right, well, I can't wait to see one. Of course, I've never seen you, so I guess the both will coincide at some point. I will actually walk across.
I'm going to try to make it the Gray Fox this year.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Hopefully that'll happen.
I'll be up there somewhere.
Yeah.
That'll be good. We'll bring one by, or I'll find you, or you'll find the TP, and however that works out. And
that's it.
I figure at some point it'll be across a meadow-filled field somewhere in the morning, and there'll be one banjo that needs
you'll
no adjusting.
It.
I will know that's Mark Horowitz.
Right. You'll hear it across the meadow.
There you go. That's perfect. Well, listen, man, I know you have a lot of things on your mind, and appreciate all this information. We've been talking about this for a while, and I kept telling you, when you're ready to talk about it, you come on and we'll talk about this great new space-age old-time banjo that you invented.
Well, like I said, it's not the light bulb. it's not Ben Franklin and his kite and his key.
Well, that's good.
But it is something that I think that'll appeal to a certain player who just wants a trouble-free instrument that sounds consistently good every time they pull it out of the bag, and they just don't have to worry about it.
That's great, and it sounds great. I mean, I knew the sound would be important to you. When you were telling me about this with the composite and this, but I knew overriding the sound would be the most important thing to you because I know how you approach music and how particular you are about tone.
Well, it's curious, you know, you would think that, and you know, his sound is, of course, very important to me, and but my original objective, again, was to get that wooden neck off there and put on something that wouldn't do the boogie, every time the humidity went up above 20%. And once I had it together, you know, with that neck, then the task began to try to make the thing sound the way I wanted it to. And that was really, that's the part I enjoy most.
It's perfect.
Is just fiddling with these things. It's just like tuning an engine in a car. You know, do you use a Carter carburetor or fuel injection or Holley do you change
or both,
the manifold?
Or do you use them both? That's how much I know about cars. Could you use them both and have this perfect thing developed that we're talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly.
I don't know about cars. Well, Mark, listen, I wish you the best for Leah, and we'll hope that I know she's ready, and she's been pregnant long enough, and I just can't
she's ready. We're ready.
You're all ready.
We're all waiting.
Well, listen, you don't have to tell me right away, but within a week or so, let me know.
I'll let you know. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure, man. You're always free to call in.
Take care of yourself.
Thanks, bud. Bye. Mark Bye-bye. Horowitz. It's always good to chat with Mark Horowitz. 5 times. That was the 5th time he's been on. And if you go back to the UnrealBluegrass.com, you can certainly fill out all of the history behind Mark. And Mark is just, I've never met the man. I met him through, we both have a friend named Tom, and that was the connection. And Tom has opened up all kinds of relationships to me. Mark has furthered that tree, and I just benefit from it all, as do you. Mark Horowitz, soon to be a grandpa, and honestly, one of the better, best banjo players you're ever going to hear. In old time, he just owns that. Now he's got this banjo that he can walk around with and not have to tell jokes about Tupac Shakur on his tool belt. Thanks, Mark. Thanks so much, Mark Horowitz.